Fan Run Radio podcasters, many of you have been asking for a way to support the station if you live out of state and can't support our sponsors, and now there's a way. Just go to shopfanrun.com and buy a shirt, or two, or ten, and know that you're supporting the station that does our best to support you. Shopfanrun.com.
Sports Knoxville is proud to present the show that the fans deserve.
I'd consider myself a realist, all right, but in philosophical terms, I'm what's called a pessimist.
The show that the city needs.
This town deserves a better class of sports radio. And we're going to give it to them.
This is Talk Sports with John Reed and Cody McClure.
Leave one wolf alive and the sheep are never safe.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves. Happy Monday morning to you as we come into the Fan Run Studios. John Reed, a ghost man in Cody McClure's seat for the time being. Ben Lee, intern Parker's got the Periscope fired up if you want to watch along. Cody's on his way. Don't worry, don't change the channel. He'll be here. Ben Lee, how are you this morning? Thumbs up from Ben Lee. Well, obviously, the story here in Knoxville is 19-game winning streak is no mas. No mas as Tennessee gets a little bit embarrassed. A little bit embarrassed on Saturday night. Man, Kentucky wanted it more. I want to open up the show by saying I was wrong, because I was wrong. I scoffed at the idea that Kentucky losing to LSU would make that game tougher for Tennessee. I scoffed at the idea and said, hey, if this Kentucky team doesn't come out already peak motivated, then maybe that's a whole nother issue for John Calipari. Oops. My bad. Because you saw on Saturday night that Kentucky did play like a desperate team. They did play like a team who has never lost back-to-back games in Rupp Arena under John Calipari. They played like a team who needed to stay in the SEC title race, who needed to avenge a loss to LSU to get back in the conversation for a one seed, and Kentucky played like a Final Four team. They did. You got to tip your hat to them. I mean, I'm not wearing a hat right now. I took off my toboggan, but if you're watching on the Periscope, you could see I'm still tipping my hat. Respect. Kentucky needed it more. They came out. They played like they needed it more. I don't want to oversimplify it and say that was the reason Tennessee lost, because I do think there were some things that were troubling that we'll talk about later this hour. But Tennessee has their 19-game winning streak snapped. Kentucky makes up for the LSU loss. Tennessee now in a dogfight to win the SEC. We talked all week about how this game against Kentucky was a game for validation. Tennessee start not really validated. Saw a lot of people dancing on the grave of Tennessee. And look, the grave's not dug. We're not finished. It's not 6 feet deep. I mean, you've just put the shovel in and you already had people dancing, but people were waiting. People were waiting to say, look, I told you that this schedule that Tennessee was running through was too easy. I told you they haven't played any good teams since December when they played Gonzaga. Overrated. Overrated. They were waiting. And to no surprise, they were out in full force. I mean, you expect it from Kentucky fans, of course. You expect it from Kentucky fans in Kentucky media. No surprise. You knew that Pat Forty was going to get involved in it, right? You knew Pat Forty was going to get involved and write his little snarky column and talk about how Tennessee was overrated. Like, none of that stuff was surprising, but none of that stuff matters if Tennessee can respond. And I do think for the crowd of people who are saying Tennessee needs a loss, Tennessee needs to refocus, well, you got what you wished for. Because if there was a loss that Rick Barnes could point to and say, you ain't as good as you thought you were, you haven't won bleep. Excuse me, Rick Barnes doesn't cuss anymore. His daughter told him he was going to hell. You ain't as good as you thought you were. You haven't won anything yet. That's more like it. That was the game on Saturday night. If Tennessee was feeling themselves, they don't really have a reason to be feeling themselves anymore. Now, there's a lot of things you could take away from this game, and we're going to get to them all throughout the first hour. The thing that jumps out to you is that Kentucky, you know, we talked on Friday. That was one of the keys of the game. One of the keys of the game was that Kentucky on the offensive glass is better than Tennessee. You saw that come to fruition, especially in key moments of the game, especially in the first half and early second half. Kentucky got to every 50-50 ball. They got to balls that were 30-70. Tennessee should have gotten to them 70% of the time, and Kentucky still got to them. That was something we talked about worrying about. Pay attention to that. And it came to fruition, and Tennessee couldn't come up with the big defensive stops. Is it as simple as pointing to the shooting struggles of Tennessee? You know, Jordan Bowden, Lamonte Turner, not really giving you anything at all. Admiral and his three-point shot being non-existent. Is it as simple as that of saying, hey, no big deal, it happens, Tennessee hits shots, it's a different game? Is it as simple as saying, look, we love the Bass Brothers. We love Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. We love them. They're great. But they don't have the edge in this matchup when it comes to their top two versus our top two. Because Keldon Johnson really created the separation in the first half with three big clutch threes. And obviously you saw what P.J. Washington did to Tennessee's front line all night. Those guys came to play. They combined for, what, 42 points? 42 points on, what, 17 of 26 from the field? That's pretty damn stout. And Tennessee's guys combined for, what, 33? It's a little bit of the difference in the game right there. Those guys were better. A lot to take away from this game. The flow of the game was strange. And I think you can point out bad officiating without blaming the officials. Is that fair? Can I point out inconsistent bad officiating? Because what is bad officiating? To me, bad officiating is inconsistent officiating. You can argue about whether or not you miss calls, make too many calls, don't make the calls, whatever you want to say. I think everyone comes to an agreement. If you're trying to point out bad officiating, I think every sports fan would ultimately settle on inconsistent officiating. If you're going to call it loose, call it both ways. If you're going to call it tight, call it both ways. If you're going to say that it's a physical game, let it be a physical game. And that was the issue I had, was on Saturday night, you had 9 fouls in the first half. it was at the point where neither team got into the bonus in the first half. Hell, Tennessee didn't shoot a free throw in the first half. But it wasn't like Kentucky got an overwhelmingly positive whistle in the first half. They were letting things go for the most part. But even then, like, P.J. Washington got called for a charge on his own first possession. 20 seconds into the game, he tries to drive to the rim. Grant draws a charge. Kentucky was not called for another foul until the 3 minute and 50 second mark. That's almost 16 minutes of game time when Kentucky didn't get whistled once for a foul. Now, again, I think you can point out inconsistent officiating and not be blaming the officials. The officials set the tone in the first half that, hey, this was going to be a fight. Square up. Tennessee came out in the second half thinking, hey, we got to be tougher. And then all of a sudden it was, whoa, whoa, whoa. We're going to call a lot of fouls. We're not going to let you get out of control like you did in the first half. We completely flipped how we're going to officiate the game. I told you there were 9 fouls in the first half. Well, there were 6 fouls at the first TV timeout. If you're not really sure of what that means, in college basketball, you have a TV timeout every 4-minute increment. The first dead ball under every 4-minute increment. I believe it happened at like the 15:40 mark. They already had 6 fouls. After 9 for 20 minutes, they had 6 in the first 4 minutes. By the second TV timeout, the under 12 timeout, there were 14 fouls. You had eclipsed the first half by over 5. So, like, to point out that the referees were inconsistent in how they called that game, that's not me blaming the officials for Kentucky whipping Tennessee's ass, because make no mistake about it, Kentucky whipped Tennessee's ass. But Tennessee didn't get a free throw until the 17-minute mark. And then all of a sudden, everyone was in the bonus with 10 minutes remaining. Kentucky made the bonus, I believe, at the 14-minute mark. 14:53 when Kyle Alexander picked up his 4th foul. And that's a whole other conversation we have to have later, is what the hell happened to Kyle Alexander. Because I can tell you one thing, as Tennessee's schedule gets tougher and Tennessee has hopes of making some type of tournament run, both in the SEC tournament and the conference tournament, that ain't going to happen if Kyle Alexander does what Kyle Alexander did on Saturday night. Ain't going to happen. No way. Tennessee hung around in the physical first half. They gave up a bucket right before the buzzer to be down 6, and then the game was lost in the first 4 minutes of the second half. Like, I don't know what the hell Grant Williams and Admiral and them boys talked about at halftime. I don't know what Rick Barnes' plan was, but I don't think it's what happened, because you gave up a 14-0 run right away. You came out of the locker room, 3 turnovers, an air ball, 2 missed threes. Admiral misses a contested layup, and you didn't score for the first 4 minutes. Hell, you didn't hit your first field goal until Admiral got a tip in at the 5 minutes into the second half. The game was over at that point. And Tennessee fought a little bit. They made a run. They showed some heart. It went from 62-38 to what, 62-51? For 2 minutes, Tennessee played Tennessee basketball, and you thought, hey, maybe they're about to make a run. I know we did at Hops and Hollers. I know we got live whenever Tennessee went on that 13-0 run, but when it got close and you thought, okay, here's a chance, Tennessee was in a zone defense trying to give Kentucky different looks, and they did do that, and that did benefit them during their run, was you saw them go to a little full-court trap, throw a little zone in. They were switching up their defenses, but when it was an 11-point game, they're in a zone. Calipari and Kentucky took their time. They didn't get rattled, which is a sign of a well-coached team. Like, say whatever you want about John Calipari, I think he's a good coach. And they work the ball around. They find P.J. Washington. He takes his 2 dribbles, finishes at the rim over Alexander. Because at that point, Alexander was in foul trouble. He couldn't really contest. And that was that. That was the end of the game. Very next possession, Tennessee, for some reason, tries a little two-man game with Grant Williams and Pines. Spoiler alert, it didn't work out when they tried to pass it to Pines in the post. They get a fast break on the other end. Alexander gets his fifth foul. Back to a 15-point game. Boom. Game over. That was it. That was it. Tennessee ends up getting blown out. Obviously, their worst loss of the season. Do we know how far back we have to go to see how bad, how long it's been since Tennessee's been blown out like this? Do we know what happened? Like, what was the last game in 2018 where they lost like this? Would it be the Alabama game? That's the one that jumps out in my mind. After Tennessee went to Lexington and won, they went to Alabama and lost 78-50. That's obviously their last big-time blowout. They lost by 11 at Georgia two games later. And then, of course, you know they lost a heartbreaker in the SEC championship to Kentucky and a heartbreaker in the NCAA tournament to Loyola. But it's been a while since Tennessee has had to respond. It's been a while. We'll see how that happens on Tuesday. But there's a lot to unpack from this game. Cody McClure's in the building. We'll catch a break. We'll bring him in. Get his thoughts. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Cody McClure joins us. Cody McClure, welcome in. Nice of you to show up.
Well, thanks, John. It's good to be
no,
here.
No. You don't get to say your catchphrase if you don't make the beginning of the show. No.
Good to be
no!
here.
No.
Well, look, I thought that I thought we had the day off. I woke up, I realized it was President's Day. I was like, "Oh, Nate must have forgotten to send the email." I mean, it's President's Day. Of course, we're taking off. Everybody knows you take off for President's Day. But it turns out I flipped on the radio. Everybody was here, so I was the only one that didn't get the memo that wasn't sent out that we were taking off for President's Day.
We already did our Abraham Lincoln appreciation show.
Well, today's President's Day, John.
Well, I know, but we already did our Abraham Lincoln appreciation show.
Well, yeah, but I have to have some kind of excuse for being late. So, I'm using President's Day.
We actually used to get Abraham Lincoln's birthday off altogether. Like George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and a couple others. That's why they made President's Day, because there were too many days off.
Who used to get those off?
You know, like schools,
here at
banks.
The station.
Oh.
Schools, banks, stuff like that.
I don't think the station has ever taken President's Day off. We may have taken Columbus Day once or twice, but never President's Day.
I cannot confirm.
Nor did I.
What's your big takeaway from the game on Saturday? Because I think it could be as simple as Tennessee didn't make shots. Tennessee's role players didn't show up. It could be as simple as that. It could be as simple as, hey, Kentucky is more talented, and when Kentucky plays the way they play, they're going to be tough to beat. Like, Kentucky looked like a championship team on Saturday, and P.J. Washington was unguardable. Tennessee, and Tennessee maybe is looking at this the same way I was on Saturday night and the way I still am, that this is game one of at least three, maybe four. Maybe don't show all of your cards in Lexington in game one. At least that's what I'm hoping, because it was very frustrating to watch Kentucky dump the ball to P.J. Washington on the right block, him fake to the left, take one dribble to the right, and hit a three-foot jump hook. It seemed like that play was open all night. It was money, and Grant couldn't guard him. Kyle couldn't guard him. Admiral couldn't guard him. I'm hoping that when the games actually matter, that you see a different look there. Maybe a little quick double team, or, hell, I don't know, something at least resembling defense, because P.J. Washington had his way with Tennessee's front line. Dump it down, right block, fake left, one or two dribbles, boom, easy money. Hopefully that's a part of it, is just that Tennessee is saving the good strategy for later on in the season, because it didn't look like Tennessee had much good strategy.
As I was drinking ale at Hops and Hollers, it looked like we were just completely out of sorts. I couldn't help but notice how we looked so different than we've looked all year. And I knew that it would be our first test since Gonzaga. I knew it would, we would look out of sorts at times playing a really good team, but I didn't expect for it to be the whole game. I didn't think it would go the way it went, where really Kentucky just owned us all night. And it was kind of my big fear that, what if we go into Lexington on a 19-game win streak and get exposed? And looked like we got exposed a little bit.
I'm not willing to say that Tennessee got exposed. Like, everyone knew that there was a loss coming eventually. Everyone knows that's how college basketball works. Not overly concerned that Tennessee all of a sudden isn't good.
I know we're good. I'm worried about, are we as good as we thought we were?
Well,
are we one? Are we with a handful of other teams as the best teams in the country, or are we actually tier two or tier three? That's what I'm worried about.
Well, if you thought that we were by far the best team in the country, or that we were, clear cut number one in the country, then yes, I think you've been exposed as to Tennessee not being as good as you thought they were.
I think beating Gonzaga and playing full-strength Kansas the way we did early and beating Louisville down the way we did early, I think we showed off a lot of strength as being one of the best teams in the country in a small handful of teams. But, yeah, I'm worried about if we're actually a one seed.
Well, I'm not ready to go there. I still think Tennessee's a one seed. I still think Tennessee is a championship contender. I just think that what I saw on Saturday, and look, you can't overreact because you're not going to play in Lexington again, ever.
Right.
In 2019. That's just your one trip to Lexington. It doesn't matter.
That was your most difficult remaining game.
And you're not going to play another huge, big game on the road after this Saturday at LSU. After that, every game that matters will be in Knoxville or a neutral site. So I do take comfort in that. And on a neutral site, Tennessee, Kentucky maybe goes differently. And, I'm not going to panic until Tennessee doesn't answer the bell Saturday in Baton Rouge or on March 2nd when Kentucky comes to Knoxville. If Kentucky manhandles Tennessee that way in Knoxville, then I'll be concerned.
See, I feel like we'll beat Kentucky in Knoxville. It's way different having to go on the road and play them as it is playing at home, obviously. And that was a tough environment, and they were ready for it, and they flexed on us.
I opened the show by saying I was wrong. You said that Kentucky would be extra motivated, and I said, the LSU loss isn't going to really matter. They're already going to be peak motivated. No, I believe that was the wrong take. I do think Kentucky came out with more to play for, needing a big win, needing to make a statement, and they did.
You said that?
Yeah, you weren't listening when you drove in?
No, unfortunately, I had it on John Boy and Billy, 103.5. I couldn't turn the channel. I was listening to the classic rock station last night, and so I just happened to still have it on there this morning, and I couldn't turn it. It was so bad that I couldn't turn it. And I think that's their strategy. I think that's how they've made it so long. It's so bad you just can't turn away. It's like a car wreck.
Interesting.
I was captivated. I didn't like it, don't get me wrong. But I couldn't turn the channel.
People on the Periscope are saying the SEC tournament is like a home game for Kentucky typically.
I don't think that's going to be true in Nashville this year. I mean, they're going to have crowds, but it's going to be a neutral site game. Like, Tennessee is going to send a crowd What was the split last year in Missouri? Do we remember, like, was there any thought that it was like 80-20 Kentucky to Tennessee? Because I don't remember that being the case. Was it?
I feel like Kentucky did have most of the crowd there.
I mean, we know that Kentucky travels, and Kentucky has the benefit of knowing they're good every year. So when the SEC tournament tickets go on sale, they have relationships that they've cultivated over the last 15 years of being really good. And Tennessee, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but for the most part, the last 7-8 years, we haven't really had to worry about the SEC tournament. And, you know, since Bernie, we haven't won the SEC tournament. So we're still kind of new to this get excited for the SEC tournament thing. I think it being in Nashville, you'll see Tennessee fans show up. I don't think it's going to be a home game by any stretch.
I think like 50-50?
No, it'll be 65-35.
Still Kentucky?
Yeah. I mean, Lexington's not far from Nashville. Like, it's the same distance from Lexington to Nashville as it is Knoxville to Nashville.
If it's the same distance and it's in our home state, I feel like we should show up.
They got a bigger basketball fan base.
I feel like we should get 50% of the crowd there.
Hell, half of, you know, 30% of Tennessee football fans are Kentucky basketball fans. Not 30%, but
high.
Not 30%, but there's a decent amount.
That seems like just a weird thing to be a Volcat. You really went all out this weekend, didn't you? New laptop, new headphones.
And then I was ready to go, ready to take on, huge show, and then you show up 15 minutes late.
Well, you shouldn't have had your hopes up. New cup, too. Was that a Grizzlies cup?
Yeah. I DM'd that guy, and we're in the works, and he sent me a cup.
Oh.
I went out of my way, and I was trying to get that set up, the Fox Sports Knoxville Grizzlies relationship.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Trying to protect the environment, so I'm trying to get rid of relying on plastic bottles so much, so I'm going to start bringing my own big cup of water from home.
Isn't that made out of plastic?
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to throw it away and get a new one every time.
It'll eventually get thrown away.
Well, yes, sure. But me using this 100 times compared to 100 big water bottles, I still think we will be on the net positive here.
You're putting off death just like a little bit.
No, a big bit.
I only buy plant-based water bottles. You know, most plastic water bottles nowadays are made from plants. Somehow. I don't know how that works.
I don't think that's true. I've seen you come in here with just regular water bottles bought from the gas station. I'm doing my part to protect the environment.
Well, so am I.
Although there's little black specks in my water. I don't know if it's from the filter or just the cup is dirty, but
that's just the environment.
We're just going to just power through as I drink this nice filtered Brita water. Hashtag ad.
I really don't believe that cutting down on plastic helps the environment. I think recycling is overrated. I think it's just a scam for the most part. Just a big scam.
It seems dumb.
Not really. Not when you think about it. Seems dumb to me to collect all your plastic bottles and your cans to put in different places.
Who's profiting off of the recycling?
I don't know.
Where's the scam?
It just maybe not a scam. It just seems, I don't know, it seems like a weird thing to do. Let's put all our plastic here, all our paper here. Is that really helping anything? I don't think it's helping anything.
I think it is.
I mean, you can think that. Like, I guess it feels good to recycle, but I don't think it really matters.
Where else is the plastic going to go?
Where all the other trash goes.
The ocean. And kill all of our aquatic life.
Aquatic?
Aquatic.
Is that what we're worried about?
Or into landfills.
Well, what's it going to hurt there?
Kills the soil.
Kills the earth.
The earth is fine.
I mean, that's just a dead space.
The earth is not fine. I don't know if you've paid attention. It's rained for a month and a half straight because we're melting the glacier caps and creating more condensation, which creates more precipitation, and it's just rain and rain and rain and rain.
It snowed in Vegas over the weekend.
Okay.
Was condensation the word I was looking for there, Ben?
Yeah.
Evaporation.
Precipitation.
Evaporation was the word I was
looking for. Condensation is like that stuff on the window when it...
No, I was thinking of evaporation. Yeah. Let me try that again.
Evaporation, precipitation.
Evaporation goes into precipitation, which is what we've experienced. But let me try this again. We're melting the glaciers that are creating more water, which is creating more evaporation, which is then, you know, when you evaporate, it goes through the cycle again and falls as precipitation. And I don't know if you've noticed, but it's raining an awful lot.
I think condensation actually might be the second step. It might be evaporation, condensation, precipitation.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So the thing is, though,
so I was right
still,
the first time.
Yeah. Still not hurting the planet.
No, we are.
We're not. There's nothing wrong with the planet.
Cody, someone on the Periscope says you need to watch One Strange Rock.
Are you
Netflix.
A climate change denier? Like, are you a climate change denier, or is that where we're going with this?
No, I'm not a climate
denier. Then how are we not hurting the planet?
Of course the climate's changing.
Nice look, Neasy says the Earth is effed.
The Earth will be fine. What will happen to the planet? Nothing will happen to the planet.
It'll die.
The planet will be here.
The planet will always be here floating around space. It's just will have life on it.
Ah, that's my point. You guys are worried about the human race.
And the trees and the birds and the
dogs. Not the planet.
Dogs.
Planet will be okay.
Oceans.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
The conversation is the problem. Everyone says we're hurting the planet. We're not hurting the planet. We're hurting our chances to live on the planet.
Okay.
Human self-interest. That's all it is.
Seems like a weird semantic to try to hammer home, but
if the planet's natural state is to have life on it, and at some point there's no life on it, did you not hurt the planet?
Why does the planet need to have life on it? The planet was here for a long time before life was ever on it. The planet's still going to be here. Jupiter doesn't have life on it, but Jupiter's doing fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Venus, mm-hmm. Is there life on Venus? No, Venus is doing fine.
But if we go to Jupiter and alter it and change it for the worse, are we not hurting the planet?
What do you mean altering and changing it for the worse?
Pollution, changing the CO2, changing the carbon effect of it, like changing things about it in a negative way.
It's not like the planet goes away, though. The planet doesn't explode at that point.
Okay, how about...
It's just a different kind of planet.
When you change something vital in your body, you die. Is that not hurting you?
Yeah, but the planet doesn't die.
If you're a Tennessee fan needing a little perspective from this game, if you're freaking out, our friend Will Warren points out, all four of last year's Final Four teams lost a game on January 31st or later. So you do kind of need a loss. No one's been on a 17-game winning streak or longer and won the championship since Indiana did it when they went undefeated. And of the Final Four teams, both Michigan and Kansas had multiple conference losses by 15 points or more. So, I mean, this isn't something to overreact about just yet. There's a couple of things to be concerned about, though, coming from this game. I'll talk about that next. Stick with us. Talk sports on Fan Run Radio. Have you not seen the footage, Cody? Have you not seen the footage of what's going on in Russia with the polar bears? As polar bears are overtaking the land, searching for food?
In Russia?
Yeah. It's Russia, right?
What's going on in Russia?
The polar bears have overtaken the northern part of Russia.
So the people are just screwed there? The polar bears have just taken
the polar bears
as their
have
own.
Made their way down and said, "Hey, all of our food is we can't find food. We're in trouble. The ice caps are melting. We are now taking over your land.
This is our area now." So, I love that. I love seeing the polar bears band together for strength.
Yeah, sure.
Love that. Hopefully, that happens on this side of the planet at some point. Won't it be great when Canada is just completely swallowed up by polar bears? and we don't have to deal with those damn Canadians anymore.
What happens if the food population here gets messed up, though, and all the bears come out of the Smokies?
Well, I guess we better stay inside.
And the wolves and the bears create an alliance that they don't have to look for food any longer because humans taste good.
You know, there was a pack of coyotes walking around my apartment complex over the weekend. And I'm serious about that. It's up on a big hill, and there's, like, you know, forest area below. And I heard them howling, and they were loud. I was like, dang, those coyotes must be close. One of them walked across the parking lot. So maybe there's something to that. Maybe the coyotes are looking for food, too.
What time of day was this?
It was midday.
Oh.
It was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Would have been a weird time to be out walking your dog.
Yeah. Yeah. You might have had one less dog. Those are majestic animals. I love to hear them howl.
Coyotes?
Yeah. They have like this yelp, like the high-pitched yelp.
I feel like they're the opposite of majestic. They're like scroungy. I don't know if scroungy is a word, but I'm like,
they're
like scoundrels.
The hyena kind of.
They're not majestic. Now, if you told me a wolf, I would say that's majestic. I would like to hear a wolf howl, a coyote yelping. Buddy, that's not what majestic is.
I'm impressed by scruffy, you know, things that that survive in packs. Like hyenas, you know how dangerous they are? I mean, lions don't really mess with them if they're alone. Now, obviously, a pack of lions trumps a pack of hyenas, but
I believe I saw a video recently where two lions took down a pack of hyenas. It just takes two lions to get the hyenas. But one lion, you were right, the hyenas did have the one lion cornered, and he was in trouble.
I mean, I've seen Planet Earth.
But then the other lion came, and that was enough to even the score.
Not trying to brag, but I have seen Planet Earth.
Was that on Planet Earth, that hyena-lion scene? Because I just saw it on the internet. I just see it on random Twitter clips every now and then.
Yeah, I don't know.
But congrats on seeing Planet Earth. Have you seen the sequel?
No.
You should watch the sequel. It's good. They're still on the planet of Earth. The animals are even crazier this time around.
The best is I watched Planet Earth like shot in 4K on a 4K, like an 80-inch 4K TV HD, like as good as it gets. And it's quite an experience.
Yeah, here you are wanting to kill all those poor animals on this planet.
I don't want to kill them. I was simply trying to prove the point that the actual planet will be okay. That's all I was saying. Yeah, the animals, they'll die off just like us. Which will be disappointing when that day comes. Can't be too far off either. I mean, you look at the damage we've already done, like, can't be too much longer. Give it 8-10 years maybe.
When you're looking at what happened Saturday night, do you come out with any big areas of concern? Like, what's your biggest area of concern? What do you actually think does matter moving forward? Because we all acknowledge 31 basketball games in the year. You're going to have some nights where you're just off. You're going to have some nights where the officiating doesn't kind of match your style versus the other teams. But what from that game do you look at and say, yeah, That worries me.
Well, I worry about what talented teams with length can do to us in a tournament setting. And I worry about how we respond to it. Because we really didn't respond Saturday. We tried there for a bit. You know, I guess we cut it to, what, 12 at one point?
11.
11. So we tried to get back in it, but we just never did, and we were just shook. We just appeared to be shook the whole game. And if we have a game like that in the tournament where we just get shook and a team's got some big, long guy who's just dominating us, then we're going to get beat, and that's going to be the end of the year.
The good news is, I guess, that you're unlikely to face a team that is good with multiple big, long guys until late in the tournament. That's the good news, right? Is that doesn't happen until the Elite Eight or the Final Four. It's not like mid-majors are just, you know, stocked with 6'9 athletic power forwards who are going to be NBA players with a NBA type of forward out on top hitting threes. Like, usually, you know, and to his credit, he had a terrible first half, but Reed Travis came out and scored 11 points in the second half. Like, there aren't many mid-majors, if any, that have the combo of P.J. Washington and Reed Travis. There aren't many bubble teams or teams that you'll see in the second round or Sweet 16 that have that type of combination. So that's the good news.
Yeah, I don't think Winthrop or Belmont are going to give us any issues with that kind of length.
But hell, the people who have been clamoring for Duke, Saturday should worry you, because P.J. Washington ain't Zion Williamson. And Kelton Johnson ain't R.J. Barrett. Is it Tyler Hero? Is that his name, Tyler? Tyler Hero ain't Cam Reddish. Like, you got beat by a lesser version of Duke. You got pounded. So for everyone who's been clamoring for that, like, you couldn't stop P.J. Washington in the post. The hell do you think's going to happen when Zion's down there? And their center, Bolden, is it Marcus Bolden? He's better than Reed Travis. And he's long. And he's good. So, like, for the people who have been saying they want Duke, Saturday night should really make you reconsider that. Let's try to figure out Kentucky before we try to play the big boss.
If we want Duke, I mean, we're going to need to be more prepared than we were Saturday night. I didn't think we were very prepared. It didn't seem like we had much of a plan. We just went in kind of throwing up balls and they didn't go in.
We ran our basic offense. We ran our basic motion offense. And look, one of my biggest takeaways from the game is that we knew Kentucky's defense was elite at guarding the two-point range. And that checked out. That passed the eye test. Those stats were verified, because Tennessee, even on the mid-range jumpers that they hit with Admiral coming off of screens or Bone getting in the lane, they were all really contested. Now, Tennessee shooting 7 of 25 from 3, that's troublesome. And maybe one of my biggest concerns coming out of this is, man, it's sad. It's sad that a guy who's played so well once conference play started can lose all of my confidence in one game. But I think that's what happened with Jordan Bowden. For him to go out and not score in the first 33 minutes of the game, to go 1-for-7, 0-for-4 from 3, for him to do that on that stage, am I overreacting by saying I've lost all the confidence that he has built up with me? Because for a while, he was Tennessee's best scorer.
Yeah, probably overreacting. But I can see why you would say that.
I mean, Tennessee's played, what, 3 huge games this year? Kentucky, Kansas, Gonzaga.
Those are the 3.
Against Kansas, Jordan Bowden, 2-for-6, 4 points. 0-for-3 from 3. Against Gonzaga, 4-for-10 from the field, 3-of-7 from 3, 11 points. That's a average game. I would have taken that on Saturday. But against Kentucky, like I just said, 1-of-7, 0-for-4 from 3, 3 points. In Tennessee's 2 losses, he's 3-for-13, 0-for-7 from 3. That worries me. Because you do need him to be good. And, like, same for Lamonte Turner. Lamonte Turner, 2-of-11, 0-for-7 from 3. Like, both of those guys concern me when I'm looking at Tennessee playing, because both those guys need to be good. And I know Lamonte has the most confidence. I know he's not shook, which sometimes is a bad thing because, like I said, 0-for-7 from 3, your boy kept shooting whenever
he kept jacking him up.
Whenever it was obvious that his shot wasn't falling, you give him credit because shooter's shooting all that, but that can be a good thing, that can be a bad thing. So what I say, Lamonte went 2-of-11, And Tennessee's other loss, you know what he went? 3 for 13. 2 for 9 from 3. So let's combine those stats. 5 of 24. 2 for 16 from 3. That's what Lamonte Turner was in Tennessee's two losses. Now you could say, hey, that's fine. That's what it takes to beat Tennessee is really bad shooting from two of their guys. Or you can say, yeah, that's Tennessee's death sentence, because I give Jordan Bone credit. He came out and Jordan Bone was awesome. And Jordan Bone helped set the tone and keep Tennessee even in the game in the first half. Jordan Bone was great. 8 of 13, 19 points. And that's going against one of the best defensive point guards in the SEC, if not the best defensive point guard in the SEC, in Hagans. Bone came out and was still able to ball. Admiral came out. It took him 18 shots, but he still got 17 points. Grant, 16 points. Now, if I'm Rick Barnes, I'm talking to Grant Williams, and I'm saying, hey, Grant, yeah, we're going to need you to shoot the ball more than 4 times.
Is that all he shot?
Now, he did shoot 9 free throws. One of them, he got fouled on a 3-pointer. So 6 other free throws. So, I mean, it was he was a little bit more involved in the offense, but I don't want Admiral getting 18 shots compared to Grant's 4. That seems like a recipe for failure. And we talked about how Grant needed to be a facilitator. Him only having 2 assists, not good. Now, granted, you can look at that and say, well, it's hard to have assists when your team's not hitting jump shots. And that's a fair point. Like, maybe Grant created more opportunities. I need to go back and count how many open looks he got his teammates, but we needed him to be more of a facilitator. And he had 2 assists. Admiral had 0 assists. Tennessee as a team, only 11 assists on 24 baskets. All of that stuff is problematic. Give Kentucky's defense credit. They deserve it. But there were times where Tennessee was just beating itself. That's a concern I have, is that, hey, you really only had 3 guys show up. If Tennessee is going to beat elite teams, they can't afford to have all 3 of Alexander, Bowden, and Lamonte be worthless.
Well, it seems like they've been afforded that most of the season, and I hope they haven't gotten used to it. You know, because the thing everybody's talked about all year is that this team can have elite players that have off nights, and they still find ways to win because they're so good.
Well, they can do that against the average SEC teams.
Right, right. You can't do that against Georgia and Arkansas and South Carolina.
Even Florida. Even Florida and Alabama, but you're not going to be able to do that against Kentucky. And you're not going to be able to do that probably on Saturday against LSU. And you're not going to be able to do that in the Sweet 16 and further.
Well, that's the thing. I hope they haven't gotten used to that, because they have won a lot of games like that where one player or 2 players didn't play very well.
So if you ask me my biggest areas of concern for this game, it worries me that only Tennessee's 3 stars showed up. But on the flip side, like, everyone knows that role players struggle on the road. That happens even in the NBA. That's just a thing that happens in basketball. Your stars are stars because they can play on the road. Your role players are role players because they can't. Tennessee needs them to show up at neutral sites the rest of the way, and maybe they will. And like I said, maybe this was just you're going into a hostile environment against a team that really needs to win, and a crowd that, you know, is pumped up and ready to go.
I just really didn't see us walking into a buzzsaw like that. I mean, I didn't see that scenario as being really possible.
Well, that takes me to my other 2 concerns, is Tennessee's manhandled physically. They didn't want it. They got beat to all the rebounds. They got beat to the loose balls. That's troubling. Hopefully Tennessee is able to kind of reload in terms of maybe being humbled a little bit and saying, hey, we got a lot of work to do if we want to get to a 1 seed. And then my other concern is that Tennessee didn't have an answer for multiple guys down low who can actually dribble a basketball and walk at the same time. Like, Reed Travis and P.J. Washington are both pretty good. P.J. Washington's better, but those guys are both – they can play. They're not just big, goofy, tall guys. Tennessee didn't really have an answer for that.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at the better teams in the country, especially Duke, that's something you're going to have to really drastically improve on. I hope they were just sandbagging a little bit with the P.J. Washington defense. Maybe we'll see a different story in Knoxville or in the SEC tournament where they're sending multiple guys at him because one-on-one, it was barbecue chicken. Eating them up. Hour one in the books. Hour two on deck. We'll kick it off with headlines. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.